Thank you for being an incredible supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, the home of the skillful art of manipulation. We're thrilled to have you as part of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes and comments mean the world to us and help us reach a wider audience with our stories. Plus, with new episodes released every day, your feedback plays a vital role in shaping what we create. It truly makes a difference. Your loyalty and enthusiasm fuel our passion for crafting gripping tales, and we're so grateful for your support. Today, we're excited to present The Grief Hacker, a story that promises to keep you on the edge of your seat. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, The Art of the Scam. I don't believe in karma. If it were real, I'd have been struck down by now. But here I am, still breathing, still taking, still profiting off the grief of others. Some people build their fortunes with sweat and discipline. Others inherit wealth through luck, bloodlines, or connections. Me? I've made my living in the quiet spaces between tragedy and charity, slipping unseen between the cracks of human suffering, feeding on the misplaced generosity of the naive. I didn't start out a thief. No one does. You wake up one day, hungry broke, watching the world move forward without you, and you realize something. Honest work is a slow death. You could grind yourself into dust for pennies, or you could take what's already falling off the table. I chose the latter, and I never looked back. GoFundMe changed the game for people like me. Before, you had to run cons in person, spin sob stories on the street, prey on old ladies with checkbooks. But now, a well-crafted story, a few stolen photos, and the money just appears. I can steal from 1,000 people at once, and they won't even notice. But I don't just steal, I curate. I don't waste my time on petty scams. No fake cancer patients, no dog surgeries. That's amateur work. I go for the big hauls, the ones people throw money at without a second thought. The freshly dead. A young father taken too soon. A mother struck by a drunk driver. A firefighter lost in the blaze. A soldier killed in action. Their families don't have time to question where every dollar goes. Their grief makes them careless. Their pain makes me rich. I watch the news like a stock trader watching the markets, tracking deaths, weighing potential. A hit-and-run victim? Maybe a few grand. A mass shooting survivor? That's real money. But nothing beats a fallen soldier. Americans will empty their wallets for a dead war hero. And that's how I found Sergeant Matthew Dawson. He was perfect. A decorated Marine, killed on deployment in some nameless desert. He had a widow. A baby on the way. His unit, loyal, heartbroken, set up a fundraiser to support his family. They poured their guilt, their love, their loyalty into that campaign, and within hours, the donations flooded in. 50 grand in a day. I was in before the second donation cleared. The trick is simple. I cloned the page, using a near-identical URL. I even stole their first few updates and reposted them on my version. People donating from news articles or Facebook shares never double-check the link. They just click and give. And give. And give. By the time they noticed, I had pulled out over 30 grand. Easy money. Another day, another score. I didn't feel guilty. Why should I? It's not like I'm putting a gun to their heads. They chose to donate. I just made sure it went to the right place, my pocket. And then the email started. We know. We're coming. Hope you spent the money. You'll pay it back in flesh. I laughed. Empty threats. I'd seen them before. The internet was full of tough guys who talked big, but never did shit. I kept moving, cashed out my accounts, wiped my devices, rented a new apartment across the city. By the time they realized what happened, I'd be a ghost. But I didn't feel like a ghost. I felt watched. I felt hunted. And for the first time, I wondered if I had made a mistake. You said, let's rewrite chapter one and use 5 times the characters you would normally use when writing a chapter regularly. ChatGPT said, The Grief Hacker. Chapter 1, The Art of the Scam. I never wanted to be a thief. But then again, nobody wakes up one day and decides, I think I'll make my living stealing from the dead. It happens in increments. Small decisions, small compromises. Justifications pile up, excuses become second nature, and before you know it, you've become the kind of person you swore you never would. That's how I ended up here, sitting in a dingy motel room with a laptop on my knees, siphoning donations meant for grieving families straight into my offshore accounts. Most people work themselves to the bone for scraps, but me? I've made a fortune out of thin air. I found a system, a weakness, a flaw in human nature, and I exploited it with precision. People love to throw money at tragedy. It makes them feel better, like they've done something good in a world full of suffering. But the thing about people who donate to charity, they don't track where the money goes. They don't check receipts. They don't question whether the grieving widow actually got that $50 they sent. They just assume. And that assumption is my playground. I don't just steal from anyone. That's reckless. Sloppy. A guy faking a terminal illness will always get caught when the money dries up and people demand proof. A girl faking a lost puppy fundraiser might get sympathy, but it's not profitable. I aim higher. I take from the dead. The freshly dead. The tragically dead. The ones whose families are too overwhelmed with grief to notice a few thousand dollars going missing. The ones whose stories are so heartbreaking that the donations pour in faster than anyone can count them. I have a process. I track obituaries, breaking news, anything that smells of unexpected death. Car accidents, mass shootings, worksite disasters. Soldiers killed in action. Those are my bread and butter. The military community is tight-knit, loyal. When one of their own dies, they rally hard. They don't just donate, they push others to donate. They spread the GoFundMe link like gospel. That's how I found Sergeant Matthew Dawson, a decorated Marine, killed overseas. He had a pregnant widow and a unit of grieving brothers-in-arms who loved him like family. His GoFundMe was set up within hours of his death, and the money was rolling in before the first tier hit the ground. The goal was $50,000. By the time I got to it, they'd already hit 30. I watched, waiting, timing my moment. And then I struck. Stealing from these fundraisers is easier than people think. Most rely on trust, not security. I created a clone of the page, an exact replica down to the last heartbreaking update. Then I ran a simple trick, search engine manipulation, social media scraping, URL masking. When people typed Sergeant Dawson Memorial Fund into Google, my page showed up first. When they shared it on Twitter, my link spread instead of the real one. It took me less than 6 hours to siphon off 20 grand. Another 10 before the family noticed something was wrong. By the time they realized what happened, I was already gone. I never dwell on my marks. That's the key to surviving in this game. Take the money, cut ties, move on. Never look back. Never second guess. Never get sentimental. But something about this one felt different. It wasn't guilt. I'm not wired for guilt. It was something else. An itch at the back of my skull. A feeling I couldn't shake. Then the email started. The first one was short. We know. The second came an hour later. We're coming. By the third, I felt something I hadn't felt in years. Hope you spent the money. You'll pay it back in flesh. Fear. I brushed it off. Empty threats. People love to talk tough when they're angry, but nobody ever follows through. I had gotten threats before. Wives sobbing over lost funeral funds, fathers begging for their children's hospital money back. They'd curse me, wish me death, promise revenge. But at the end of the day, they were just people. They weren't killers. This time, though, something felt different. I locked down my accounts, ditched my phone, booked a flight out of state. I had safe houses, aliases, offshore holdings. I could disappear in a heartbeat. But something was wrong. Very wrong. I tried to log into my usual accounts. My bank, my encrypted messaging service, my backup social accounts. Access denied. That had never happened before. I tried another. Locked. Another. Gone. My entire online identity was vanishing, piece by piece. Then, the knock at the door. Not a cop's knock. Not a landlord's knock. This was something else. A slow, deliberate thud. Measured. Heavy. I didn't move. A voice followed, muffled through the door. Run, thief. A pause. We like a chase. And then, silence. I grabbed my go bag, bolted out the fire escape, hit the alley running. Heart pounding, adrenaline surging. I didn't look back. Because for the first time in my career, I wasn't the predator. I was the prey. Chapter 2, The First Warning. I ran like my life depended on it, because for the first time, I was certain that it did. The city blurred around me as I tore through the alley, lungs burning, legs pumping. The streets were wet from a recent rain, reflecting the glow of neon signs and streetlights, warping reality into something surreal. I dodged past a homeless guy slumped against a dumpster, nearly slipped on a pile of trash bags, and kept going. Every instinct screamed at me to get distance, to put miles between me and that door, between me and them. Because this wasn't a warning. It was a promise. I didn't stop running until I reached a parking garage 3 blocks away. I ducked behind a rusted sedan, gasping for air, and forced myself to think. My pulse hammered in my ears, my body vibrating with the electric panic of prey, realizing it's being hunted. Who the fuck were these people? I had pulled off 100 of these scams, maybe more. I had taken from grieving mothers, devastated families, entire towns mourning their lost sons and daughters. Sure, some had come looking for me, desperate and angry, but they had never found me. These guys, they found me in days. They cut off my money. They locked me out of my own accounts. They knew my address. And worse, they weren't police. Cops knock like they're owed something. Like their badge is a shield against the world. These guys knocked like they already owned me. I forced my breathing to slow. Think. I had one advantage. I knew how to disappear. I had go bags stashed in lockers across the city, fake IDs, burner phones. I could be out of state by morning. I just needed to. My phone buzzed. The burner. The new burner. The one nobody was supposed to have the number to. My stomach turned to ice. The screen showed a blocked number. I let it ring. Another buzz. A text. Answer the phone. I felt like a puppet on strings, helpless as my body moved against my will. My thumb swiped across the screen. I lifted it to my ear. Silence. Then a voice. Low. Cold. Amused. You run fast. I didn't respond. My mouth felt glued shut. But we're faster. My mind raced. What do they want? Here's how this works, the voice continued. Calm. Too calm. You stole from Sarge. That wasn't your first mistake. Your first mistake was thinking we wouldn't find you. Your second mistake? Thinking you could keep the money. I swallowed hard. Listen. No, you listen. A pause. The sound of a chair creaking. Unbothered. Relaxed. We already locked your accounts. You're broke. You have nothing. But you're still breathing. That means we're feeling generous. Generous. Right. I'll give it back, I said, licking my lips. My voice felt dry, weak. Every penny. A soft chuckle. You think this is about money? My fingers clenched around the phone. You stole from family, the voice continued. You don't steal from family. Not without consequence. Family. The word sat heavy between us. I had heard about guys like this. Military types. The kind that didn't just serve together, but bled together. The kind that called each other brother, without irony. The kind that never let a debt go unpaid. You're lucky, though, the voice went on. Sarge had a soft spot for rats. We're gonna give you a choice. My jaw clenched. You have 12 hours to transfer the money back. Every cent. And then you leave. New name. New city. You never steal from another soldier's family again. You disappear, and we forget you ever existed. I let out a slow breath. That was it. I could walk away from this. And if I don't? Silence. Then we make sure you disappear forever. The line went dead. I exhaled. 12 hours. I could fix this. I'd get to one of my backups, access a different account. I could move the money back. Maybe even cut my losses and... A second text. I opened it. And my blood ran cold. A photo. Of me. With the money. Not just a screenshot. A live shot. Taken at the ATM when I withdrew my first chunk. Clear as day. Another text. We're watching. I felt sick. How? I planned for this. I prepared for this. But somehow, they were always one step ahead. I wasn't just being hunted. I was already caught. Chapter 3. Hunted. I don't panic. Not usually. Panic is for people who don't know how the game is played. People who make dumb choices that get them caught. The moment you start running without a plan, you're already dead. That's what I've always believed. That's what's always kept me ahead. But sitting in that cold, empty parking garage, staring at a photo of myself withdrawing stolen money, my stomach twisted with something I hadn't felt in years. Pure, unfiltered fear. I wanted to believe it was a bluff, that maybe they had found some public security footage, enhanced it, used it to scare me. But no, this was different. The angle, the clarity, the timing. This wasn't some old clip pulled from an ATM security system. This was taken in real time. They weren't just hunting me. They had been watching me the entire time. I swallowed the rising nausea, forcing my brain into survival mode. 12 hours. I had 12 hours to put the money back. I pulled out my burner phone, my fingers shaking as I tapped through my last remaining accounts. Most were locked. Some were completely wiped. But one account still had access. Balance, $6,743. Fucking hell. That was all that was left. My offshore funds were gone. My fake business accounts? Empty. They had taken everything. I let out a slow breath, willing myself to stay calm. Think. I needed more money. Fast. And I needed a safe place to regroup. I yanked open the glove compartment of the rusted sedan I had ducked behind, pried out a small black case. Inside, another phone, another identity. A lifeline. I flicked through contacts until I found one labeled Slick. Slick was an old associate. A money launderer, a hacker, a problem solver. If there was a loophole, a system to crack, he'd find it. And right now, I needed him more than ever. The line clicked after two rings. You sound like shit, he muttered. Slick, I need help. Silence. Then, you in trouble? Yeah. What kind of trouble? The kind that doesn't stop breathing. Another pause. Shit. That was all he needed to hear. Tell me what's happening. I kept it short. The heist, the 30 grand, the military guys who found me in less than a week. The threats. The photo. When I finished, Slick let out a long, slow exhale. You really fucked up, man. Yeah, no shit. How the hell did they track you that fast? That's what I need you to tell me. Slick was quiet for a second. You still got your old setup? Laptop? VPN? Yeah. All right. Stay put. I'll send you a link. I need you to run a scan on your device. If they got eyes on you, we need to find out how. My stomach churned. I didn't like the sound of that. You're saying they could still be watching me? I'm saying they're not just some random pissed off soldiers. These guys have access to some serious fucking tools. And if they're military, then they might not even be working alone. My grip tightened on the phone. What the hell does that mean? It means they might not just be a bunch of guys with a grudge. They could have ex-intelligence contacts. Mercenary networks. Hell, they could even have law enforcement ties. They found you fast because they knew where to look. I went cold. Slick, I've pulled this scam 100 times before. No one has ever found me. Then this isn't just about money. A sick realization crawled up my spine. They weren't just after revenge. This was personal. Before I could respond, another text buzzed on my screen. Another photo. This time, it wasn't just of me. It was my safe house. The one I had abandoned just hours ago. The lights were still on, my laptop still open on the desk. And in the foreground, a pair of boots. Military issued. Standing inside the fucking apartment. Another text. 12 hours. My stomach clenched. Slick's voice snapped me back. You still there? They're inside my place. Silence. Then a sharp breath. Run. The line went dead. I was already moving. I ditched the parking garage, disappearing into the back alleys, moving fast, sticking to the shadows. I knew better than to go back to my usual hideouts. If they had access to my devices, my movements, then every one of my old safe spots was compromised. I needed somewhere new. Somewhere off the grid. A name popped into my head. Milo. Milo wasn't a hacker, wasn't a tech guy, but he knew how to disappear. He had been running scams long before I was in the game, hiding in plain sight, dodging the law for decades. If anyone knew how to lay low, it was him. I pulled out my last burner, dialed his number. It rang. And rang. And rang. Then a voice. Heard you got some heat on your ass. Of course. They knew before I even told them. I need a place to crash. You bring company? Not if I can help it. Milo was quiet for a second. Then. Warehouse. District 17. You know the one. I knew it. And I also knew that if I went there, there was no turning back. This wasn't just some grift gone wrong anymore. This was a fucking war. Chapter 4. The Debt Collector. I kept moving. Always moving. Cities are like living organisms. They breathe, they pulse, they shift. If you know how to navigate them, you can become invisible, slipping through the cracks like a ghost. Right now, that's exactly what I needed to be, a shadow, a whisper, a phantom on the wind. Because the moment I stood still, I was dead. Milo's warehouse was across the city, tucked in the ruins of District 17, an industrial graveyard filled with rusting skeletons of factories, abandoned shipping yards, and the kind of places where bodies disappear without a trace. It was perfect. Remote. Isolated. Safe. Or at least, as safe as I was ever going to get. I took the long route, changing cabs, hopping buses, walking through crowds, doing everything I could to make sure no one was tailing me. But the problem was, I didn't know what I was running from. They were watching me. Tracking me. Cutting me off from the world. I had spent years perfecting the art of vanishing, and yet they found me in days, which meant they weren't just watching my devices. They were watching me. By the time I reached the warehouse, my paranoia had twisted itself into something almost tangible, slithering beneath my skin like a living thing. Every streetlight felt like a spotlight. Every car engine sounded like it was creeping toward me. Milo's place looked like nothing from the outside. A forgotten shipping depot, its corrugated metal siding rusted, the windows either smashed or boarded up. A perfect hideout. I knocked twice. Paused. Knocked three more times. A slot in the door slid open, revealing a pair of eyes, cold, assessing. Then the locks clicked. The door creaked open. Milo hadn't changed. Tall. Wire-thin. Sharp as a blade. His hair was buzzed short, his expression unreadable. He stepped aside, letting me in without a word. Inside, the warehouse smelled like dust, oil, and old cigarettes. A single hanging bulb buzzed overhead, casting flickering shadows across stacks of crates, mismatched furniture, and an old couch covered in a tattered blanket. "You look like shit." I exhaled. "Nice to see you too." He shut the door, locking it behind me. "Who the fuck did you piss off?" I didn't answer right away. Instead, I dropped onto the couch, rubbing my temples. The exhaustion was creeping in, gnawing at the edges of my mind. But I couldn't afford to sleep. Not yet. "You ever hear of Sergeant Matthew Dawson?" Milo gave me a long, slow look. "Yeah. Dead Marine. Kia Overseas. Big charity drive. That you?" I nodded. "Jesus Christ." He exhaled, pacing. "You couldn't pick an easier target? Had to go for the one group of people you never fuck with." I didn't answer. Because I already knew. You don't fuck with soldiers. It was an unspoken rule in the game. You could steal from corporations, scam the government, even con rich idiots out of their trust funds. But veterans? War heroes? The guys with nothing left to lose? That was suicide. And I had walked straight into it. Milo dragged a chair over, sat down, and fixed me with a look that was somewhere between pity and disbelief. "All right. Talk." So I did. I told him everything. The scam. The 30 grand I siphoned before they noticed. The emails, the phone calls, the photo of my apartment. The fact that they knew my every move before I even made it. Milo didn't interrupt. He just listened, his fingers tapping against the arm of the chair. When I finished, he let out a slow whistle. "Yeah, you're fucked." I leaned forward. "I need to know how they found me." "They didn't just find you," he said. "They erased you. That's a different kind of skill set. That's what was scaring me the most. These guys weren't amateurs. They didn't just track me down. They dismantled my entire operation in less than a week." Milo stood up, walked over to a battered metal cabinet, and pulled out a bottle of whiskey and two glasses. He poured, handed me one. "Here's what I think," he said. "You got made before you even took the money." I frowned. "What?" "Think about it." He sipped his drink. "They found you too fast. That means they were watching from the start." My stomach dropped. He was right. This wasn't just a case of someone noticing missing money and playing detective. They had been watching me before I even stole from them. I set the glass down. My mind was racing. "How?" Milo leaned against the cabinet. "You ever hear of honeypots?" I nodded. "Yeah. Fake traps. Hackers use them to lure in idiots. What if the GoFundMe was a honeypot?" The realization hit me like a sledgehammer. I hadn't hacked them. They had hacked me. They set it up. Not the real GoFundMe, but a second one. A decoy. And I walked right into it. Milo sighed, setting his glass down. "They wanted you to take that money. They let you do it. Then, when you moved it, they followed the trail. They burned your accounts, locked you out, took control. And now? Now they're closing in." I felt sick. I had played myself. Milo's expression darkened. "That 12-hour deadline they gave you?" I nodded. "They're not expecting you to pay it back." I swallowed hard. "Then what do they want?" He didn't answer. He didn't have to. Because we both knew. They didn't want their money. They wanted me. And that meant I had one choice. I had to disappear. For good. Chapter 5, The First Payment. I had been running scams for years, slipping through the cracks, staying ahead of the game, believing I was too smart to ever get caught. But now, sitting in the dim glow of a flickering warehouse light, staring at the whiskey glass in my shaking hands, I realized the truth. I wasn't being hunted. I had already been caught. I just didn't know it yet. Milo had said it himself. This wasn't about money anymore. If it ever was. "They let you steal it," he had told me. This was never about stopping you. It was about seeing how far you'd go before they shut the door behind you. And now that door was shut. Locked. I wasn't walking away from this. Unless I did something insane. Unless I took control of the game. Milo finished his drink, watching me with those dead, calculating eyes. "You got options," he finally said. "None of them are good." I exhaled, pressing my fingers against my temples, thinking. "Lay them out." He held up a finger. "Option one, you do what they say. You transfer what little money you have left, beg for mercy, and pray they let you live. Spoiler alert, they won't." I nodded. Knew that already. "Option two, you disappear. You leave everything behind, change your face, change your name, bury yourself so deep that they'll never find you." I swallowed. "Can you do that?" "Maybe. But they've already proven they're better at finding people than I am at hiding them. Not good enough." I leaned back, breathing deep, waiting for the third option. The only one that mattered. Milo sighed, rubbing his jaw. "You don't want to hear it. Say it anyway." His eyes met mine. Cold. Unforgiving. "You go on the offensive." The words sent a sharp, electric charge through my brain. Go on the offensive? Against them? The men who found me in less than a week, erased my identity, stripped me of my resources, and were actively closing in? That was suicide. But what choice did I have? I sat forward, elbows on my knees. "How?" Milo studied me for a long moment before standing, walking over to a steel locker in the corner of the warehouse. He keyed in a combination, swung the door open, and pulled out a duffel bag. Dropped it at my feet. I unzipped it. Guns. Not cheap street-level bullshit. Real weapons. Military grade. Pistols. A sawed-off shotgun. Even a suppressor. I exhaled. "Jesus, Milo." He crouched down beside me. "I don't know who these guys are, but they're not just some grieving veterans looking for revenge. They're organized. They have resources. And they don't just want to punish you." He tapped the bag. "They want to erase you. I already knew that. So what's the play?" I asked. Milo smirked. "We remind them that you're not the only predator in this city." We spent the next hour prepping. I changed my clothes, swapped my phone, wiped every digital trace I could. I ran every trick I knew, spoofed locations, fake IP addresses, burner accounts. It wouldn't stop them from finding me, but it would buy me time. Time to strike first. Milo had intel. He always did. "They're staying in a safe house," he told me, pulling up a grainy satellite image on an ancient laptop. 4 blocks from where they found you. They're not even trying to hide. That meant one thing. They weren't afraid of me. Big mistake. It was just after 2 a.m. when we got there. A shitty apartment building, third floor, one window cracked open. A black SUV parked outside. No lights on. I crouched low behind a dumpster, watching. Listening. Milo nudged me. "You sure about this?" "No. I wasn't sure about any of this. But if I waited for them to make the next move, I was dead. So I moved first." We slipped through the alley, up the fire escape, boots silent on metal. The window was unlocked. Amateurs. Inside, the place smelled like sweat, cigarettes, and gun oil. For men. 2 asleep. 1 at a desk. The last standing in the kitchen, checking his phone. I moved fast. Gun to the first guy's head before he could scream. The second sat frozen at the desk, eyes wide. Milo took the third before he even knew we were there. A blade across the throat, silent. The fourth. The one in the kitchen. He reached. I shot him first. The sound was deafening, the suppressor doing little to mask the fact that everything had changed. Because now, this wasn't about stolen money. This wasn't about revenge. Now, this was war. The guy at the desk. He didn't fight. He knew better. I grabbed him by the collar, slammed him against the wall. "Who are you working for?" He laughed, blood on his lips. "You think you're winning?" he coughed. I pressed the gun harder against his skull. "Answer the fucking question." Another laugh. "You already lost." My finger tightened on the trigger. And then I heard it. My burner. Buzzing in my pocket. I pulled it out, heart hammering. Blocked number. I answered. Silence. Then. Impressive. I swallowed. "Who the fuck are you?" A chuckle. "I told you before. We're watching." I glanced at Milo. At the dead men on the floor. "You're not watching shit anymore." The voice didn't waver. "Oh, but we are." A pause. "Look outside." Milo moved first, peeling back the curtain. I stepped beside him. And everything inside me went cold. The SUV was still there. But now there were 2 more parked beside it. Engines running. Headlights off. Waiting. 12 hours are up. A deep breath. A final warning. Run, thief. You can't hide anymore. The line went dead. And the war had just begun. Chapter 6, The Final Scam. We had underestimated them. That was the first mistake. The second mistake was thinking they were just men, grieving, angry, out for justice. But this wasn't justice. This wasn't some rogue squad of ex-military out to teach me a lesson. This was something else entirely. As I stared out the cracked window of the apartment, looking down at the three SUVs now idling outside, I felt something I hadn't felt in a long time. Cornered. Milo's jaw was tight. He pulled the curtain back in place, moving quickly to check the bodies, then the guns we had collected. He was thinking, processing, calculating our next move. I wasn't. I was standing there, watching the headlights flicker in the rain-streaked glass, knowing, that no matter what we did next, the game had changed. We need to go, Milo said. Now. I didn't move. We're already dead, aren't we? I muttered. Milo grabbed my shoulder, shook me hard enough to snap me out of whatever shock was gripping me. Not yet. I exhaled. Focus. Survive now. Worry about the rest later. We moved fast. I grabbed the dead man's phone off the desk, shoving it into my pocket. Milo checked the hallway before signaling for me to follow. We slipped out of the apartment, down the emergency stairs, silent, quick, barely breathing. By the time we hit the alley, the rain had started coming down harder, thick sheets of water pounding against the pavement. We need a car, Milo muttered. No shit. The SUVs hadn't moved yet. They were waiting. Watching. I had pulled 100 scams before, but nothing had prepared me for this. I was always the one pulling the strings, staying 3 steps ahead. But now I was the mark, and I had no idea who was playing me. The chase. We ran. The city blurred past us in streaks of neon and shadow. We moved fast, not fast enough. We barely made it 3 blocks before we heard the engines. Then the tires screeching. Then the headlights flashing behind us, illuminating the alleyway like a goddamn spotlight. Move. We cut left, ducking into a side street, but the SUVs were faster, cutting us off before we even made it to the next block. Milo grabbed my jacket, yanking me into another alley, shoving me up a fire escape. I scrambled. Slipped. Fucking climb. My palms were slick with rain. My heartbeat was a roar in my ears. We made it to the rooftop just as the first SUV doors opened. I didn't wait to see who stepped out. We ran. We jumped from one rooftop to another, boots skidding on wet gravel, lungs burning. I didn't look down. I didn't look back. I just kept running, kept moving, because if I stopped, I was dead. The Ghost Network. We didn't stop running until we were 4 neighborhoods away, soaked through, shivering in the cold, crouched behind a dumpster in some forgotten back alley. Milo wiped the rain from his face, breathing hard. We can't keep doing this, he said. They'll find us every time. I pulled the stolen phone from my pocket. It was still locked, but I wasn't worried about that. Then we stopped running. Milo frowned. What the hell are you talking about? I held up the phone. We find them first. Milo's expression shifted. Understanding. Then hesitation. This is suicide. I smirked, even though I didn't feel it. So is waiting. Milo let out a breath, running a hand through his hair before nodding. All right, hacker. Let's see what you can do. We found an old internet cafe 2 blocks over, a relic from the early 2000s, barely still in business. It was empty, save for a half-asleep cashier behind the counter, lost in his phone. Perfect. We took a back booth, wiping the stolen phone dry. Milo pulled out a cable, linking it to his laptop, running a bypass to break the lock screen. 5 minutes later, we were in, and what we found changed everything. The truth. I expected texts, maybe call logs, something that would tell us who the hell was after us. I wasn't expecting government-level encryption. Shit, Milo muttered. This isn't just some ex-military guys with a grudge. These are professionals. I scrolled through the messages. Most were wiped. But the ones that weren't. Package secured. Awaiting extraction. Ensure target does not escape again. Asset must be retrieved. Termination is last resort. My breath stalled in my throat. Asset. I whispered. They're calling me an asset? Milo was staring at the screen like it had personally insulted him. This isn't revenge. I looked at him. Then what the fuck is it? He hesitated. Then. They don't want to kill you. He turned the screen toward me. There. At the bottom of the message thread, was the last text sent from this phone. It wasn't a threat. It wasn't an order. It was a name. A real name. Mine. My real birth name. The one I hadn't used since I was a kid. The one I had buried years ago. I went numb. How? I whispered. Milo didn't answer. He didn't have to. Because we both knew what this meant. This wasn't just a scam gone wrong. This wasn't just about stolen money. This was about me. Who I really was. And why they wanted me alive. The setup. We need to go. Milo's voice snapped me out of my haze. I nodded, closing the laptop, wiping the phone. No more running. Agreed. I took a breath. I had spent my life stealing from people, playing them, manipulating them. But now it was my turn to be the mark. And I wasn't about to let them win. Chapter 7, The Final Debt. I used to believe I was untouchable. That no matter how many scams I pulled, no matter how many people I took from, I would always be three steps ahead. That I was too smart, too careful, too fucking good to ever get caught. But I wasn't untouchable. I was owned. They knew my real name. They had been watching me before I even stole from them. And they didn't just want their money back. They wanted me. The revelation sat heavy in my chest as Milo and I walked out of the internet cafe. The streets were wet with rain, the city humming around us, cars, neon, the distant wail of sirens. We had hours left. Maybe less. They were coming. And we weren't running anymore. The setup. We made our way back to Milo's warehouse. It was the only place we had left, the only spot we could control. And control was the only advantage we had. We spent the next hour setting up. Weapons loaded. Phones wiped. Traps placed. Milo's hands moved fast, stringing together makeshift explosives from the supplies he had stashed in the back. "They'll come in waves," he muttered. "First recon. Then force. Then cleanup." I swallowed. "Cleanup." He didn't look up. "Means if they can't take you alive, they erase everything. Everything. Including me." I clenched my fists. Not happening. The arrival. The first sign of them came an hour later. The same black SUVs. This time, they didn't park down the block. This time, they pulled up right outside. The back doors opened. Men stepped out. Not just men. Operatives. The kind who moved like ghosts, who didn't hesitate, who didn't waste words. I watched them from the window, heart hammering. They weren't here to negotiate. They were here to finish this. Milo exhaled. "We don't let them in." I nodded. "Agreed." We waited. Waited for them to make the first move. And then, they did. The first bullet. The warehouse door exploded inward, a tactical charge blowing the hinges clean off. Smoke flooded the space, the sharp tang of burning metal filling the air. Then the first gunshot. Milo dropped behind cover, returning fire. The sound was deafening in the enclosed space, bullets slamming into walls, crates, metal beams. I moved fast, flanking left, catching one of them off guard as he swept the room. I put two bullets in his chest. He dropped. Another came in right after him. I barely ducked in time, the shot whizzing past my head, punching through the wall behind me. I didn't think. I turned, fired, took him down. I had never killed before. But right now, in this moment, that didn't matter. Right now it was them or me. And I wasn't planning on dying today. The last call. The fight lasted minutes, but it felt like a lifetime. By the time the last body hit the ground, Milo was bleeding from a graze to the arm, and I was down to my last clip. The warehouse was ruined. Bullet holes everywhere. The scent of blood and gunpowder thick in the air. And then, the phone rang. Not mine. One of theirs. I picked it up. "Well done." The same voice. The same fucking voice. I tightened my grip. "Who the fuck are you?" A pause. "You're still asking the wrong questions." A chuckle. "You think you won something tonight?" I looked around. Looked at the bodies. At the blood. "Yeah. I do." Another chuckle. "Then why do you still feel like you lost?" The line went dead. And in that moment, I realized the truth. This wasn't over. This would never be over. The aftermath. Milo and I left before backup arrived. We burned the place. Wiped everything. Disappeared. I had spent my life running scams. Stealing identities. Draining bank accounts. But this? This was the first time someone had stolen mine. And I had a feeling it wouldn't be the last.